Get out.
There we go. Check it out. There you go. We're good to go.
I interview to it.
I don't know what to do with my hands. So it's my privilege to introduce one of my friends and co-workers. And the first time I met this guy, we were at a real highfalutin church event where nobody does anything. We wasn't. I met him in jail. We was in jail. We met in jail. I was on the inside. He was on the outside. But I had this guy come through. I'll try to be real quick. I had this dude come through here and start talking about NA. I didn't know shit about NA at the time. And I thought, I judged him. And I was like, man, who's this dude? What's he know about all this, you know? And he told us his story, and it helped plant a seed in my mind because I was like, he's fucked up. Like, he's fucked up, you know? And so things like that to me, and I'm not the only person in this room, whenever they see something that's fucked up or weird, it's attractive to them. It's the same thing that had me attracted to Matt, is he's fucked up and he's weird. I get to work with him. He's got a heart of gold. And Matt W. I'd like to introduce Matt W.
Wow.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes, sir.
Man. So, you weren't lying. It's full. We got people sitting on the floor back there. So, my name's Matthew. I'm an addict. Man, I can remember sitting on the floor coming back to this like several years ago, first Narcotics Anonymous convention, coming here and just being amazed. And what a surreal moment it is for me to be up here being asked to speak. I do want to clear up a little something. My buddy Tony, he shared earlier today, and want to talk about home groups just for a second. My home group is Dark Side of the Moon. Tony, he shared a little misinformation at our home group. We actually do it in the dark, and we actually know what the clarity statement is. Yeah, there we go. I'm just kidding. Mason put me up to that, by the way. So, no, hey, man, we got some fire recovery in Hohenwald. No kidding. Down those steps at Newcomers is where I found freedom. So there is that. But my topic today is on fighting the process. Wow. I am an absolute poster child for fighting the process. So I was actually outside a while ago, and I was talking to a guy known as Hillbilly Buddha. Y'all know who I'm talking about, right? So guy, and he's got, man, what a wonderful message of hope and Narcotics Anonymous he shares. And he was telling me about, you know, that he feels like that he was in this program for like 10 years before he actually surrendered to it. And I listened to all that, and it made me feel a lot better about myself. Because I can tell you without a shadow of a doubt, I have fought this process every single step of the way. The first 2 years of my recovery, I think I'd worked 6 steps, and I only answered the questions because the sponsor that I had at the time basically would not leave me alone. When are you going to do this step? When are you going to do this step? And it was always tomorrow, 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 you know? But the truth of it is to give you a backstory on that. Like, I'm going to be 100% honest with you. I hear people, they come in to speak, or they tell their story, and they talk about, you know, this gift of desperation, that they wanted to get clean, they wanted to do something different. That's just not my story. That's just not my story. I didn't want to stop using. I didn't. I am, in clinical terms, a legally motivated person to be here. You know what I mean? Basically, in a nutshell, I drove a truck for about 23 years and was doing a whole lot of stuff to keep me awake. And, you know, I got a DUI for that substance. I don't know how fucked up you got to be to get a DUI for that substance, but I got it. And... you know, the truth of it is I went to treatment when I was out on bail. I knew that I was going to have all these. I was eventually going to go to court. I knew that I was trying to get ahead of it. You know what I mean? I thought maybe if I went to treatment, maybe if I did all these things, it would look good for my court hearing. You know, get back to doing what I was doing, get back to using you. But I knew that the next year or two of my life was going to be pretty rough. So I actually I went to treatment over this place in Nashville. And, you know, unlike the place that I work at today, it was like a really super nice treatment center. You know, they got the chef and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, the daggum thing costs so much money that they'll do anything in the world to keep you there. You know, I actually still had private insurance at the time because I was driving a truck. And, you know, they talked a whole lot in that treatment center about the other fellowship. You know, for me, you know, I was so eat up with the guilt and shame of my past, I don't know that I paid attention hardly at all when I was in treatment. It was much needed necessity, for sure. I had to get cleaned out. You know, but when I got out, you know, I went to this transitional living place over in this town called Hohenwald, Tennessee. You know, when I was in Hohenwald, at that time, you know, newcomers had was real small back then. You know, it's not what it is today. I can remember a typical meeting, 5-6 people. We'd have a business meeting, maybe 3 people. You know, I still remember when I first got there, there's been a couple of newcomers meetings closed with the Lord's Prayer. I can remember that time. It was actually a couple of my home group members. I guess it was Mason and Travis. You guys know them. They got involved in sponsorship and started working some traditions and getting involved in a lot of different things. Bobby there. A lot of these people sort of led the way to you know, getting our home group to where it is today. So as far as me fighting the process, I mean, I was exposed when I went to treatment. I had in my mind that I wanted to work in recovery. That's what I wanted to do. And you often hear that. Anybody in here who works in recovery knows that they'll often have clients that come through and they say they want to be, you know, counselors or this or that. And I was actually one of those people. And when I didn't have but about 14 days clean, I thought that if I had worked in recovery, that if I'm around recovery every single day, that's going to be beneficial to my life. You know, that I'm going to be okay if I do that. Okay. Basically, wanting the results without the process is basically in so many words. So what happened is when I get to transitional living, the transitional living house that I was in was not run very well. It was like a flop house. Okay? Nobody in that establishment had any type of sponsor. They weren't going to meetings. Most of them was on disability checks. You know, there was really no recovery at all in that facility. I had a friend of mine that had brought, where I came to Hohenwald, I knew one person in that hometown, and you know, he is actually my sponsor today, but in the beginning he wasn't. But for me, I was able to work a first step because he had worked a 12th. And he brought me to this town, and I remember the very first day I come to this town, and he took me to the grocery store, bought me a pound of bologna, bought me a loaf of bread, and a 2-liter of Dr. Pepper. And he said, I'm going to be back tonight. We're going to go to a meeting at 7 o'clock. So the first few months of my recovery in Hohenwald, you know, my first job out of treatment was washing dishes at Taco Bell for $7.15 an hour. You know, I was desperately wanting to get involved in this local treatment center that they had there in this town. You know what I mean? That was my goal. But I was going to these meetings and whatever the case may be, but not really. You guys, it sounded like y'all was talking a different language to me. You're quoting all this stuff out of this book that I haven't read. You're talking about all these steps that I haven't worked. You're doing all these things, and I didn't understand it, to be 100% honest with you. All I knew is I didn't want to go to prison. I had an upcoming court date that due to COVID. They kept postponing this thing, right? So I had to go. I had to get my meeting sheet signed. I had probation officers. I had to tell them that I was at meetings, prove that I was in meeting, get to show them my meeting sheets and this and that. And around 4 months clean, I guess something happened at this treatment center, and I ended up getting a job working in the kitchen. Well, the very first day when I go to meet this lady that's going to end up being my boss, I told her that, you know, that I wanted to be a counselor, and I was willing to do anything. You know what I understand? I aligned myself in my early recovery because the people that were working steps, they scared the shit out of me, to be honest with you. There's a guy that I've been through my entire recovery with, Chase. He has 3 more weeks clean than I do. And if you know anything about Chase, he's an absolute step working machine. I just couldn't keep up with these people, with the amount of, you know, service positions and step work and whatever the case might be. I sort of fell behind when it come to that, and I started focusing on the treatment side of things. I aligned myself with a few people, and I'm going to tell you something. I know that most of y'all know this, but at the time I did not. Treatment centers are absolutely flooded with people that don't know anything about recovery. Treatment centers are absolutely flooded with people that just work a job but ain't working no steps. You feel me? They're flooded with them. So I aligned myself with some of that. And I focused on trying to get promoted at a job. And after only working 6 steps and 2 years of abstinence, showing up to quite a few meetings. I was really good at going to H&I and shit like that. But showing up at quite a few meetings and whatever, but I really wasn't working the program. I was real good at the fellowship, not too good at the program, you know? And I ended up getting a job as a counselor trainee that I was actually really good at because I can type. I'm real fast at typing, and I did pretty good in school, so I could type up an ASAM like it was nobody's business. But I was real good at identifying what your problem was, not too good at identifying what my problem was, right? I was real good at being honest about my past, but not real good at being honest about how I feel right now. So I actually had a person that was training me at the time and said things to me like, you know, after you go to those meetings for a little while and you work those steps, you know, you'll get a point in your life where you really don't need that anymore. You know what I'm saying? This was the kind of message that was in my ear. You know, you don't have to go to all those meetings, this, that, and this, and that. And I bought into some of that. So I started focusing, instead of going to conventions and asphalt recovery and things like that, I started focusing myself on going to LADAC classes. Started focusing myself on, you know, things of that nature. Hiding behind the fact that I was insecure, caused a lot of problems in my marriage, right? Not dealing with my problems. Not dealing with the fact that both of my parents are dead from active addiction. Not dealing with the fact that I was sexually abused at like 6 years old. And the first time I ever got honest about myself, I told my father what had happened. And I got called three-letter words that start with an F. You know, my whole life, you know, I've got friends of mine that you know, that I'm around, Tony and Mason and different people that I have that are real tough guys, man. You know what I'm saying? You hear them talk about their life and whatever the case may be, going to jails, going to prisons, you know, being able to defend themselves. I'm just not that guy. I'm still that.
Talk about it. Come on, set yourself free.
I'm still the scared little boy underneath my bed, hiding from my father, saying, please don't hit me no more. Please. And it's caused me to run away. And I can't talk about it. And I damn sure don't want to write about it. So at 2 years, it's actually Ryan. I went to a meeting down here in Decatur. Not Decatur, but in Florence. And it wasn't at the... it was at a church. It wasn't the survival group. And I heard Ryan from across the room tell one of the guys down in Florence, Alabama, he said, you're just around recovery. You need to be in recovery. Right? And I remember that. And I'm not really sure where... For me, it turned. Probably a lot of that came. There's three people very strong in my life. Not to name drop people, but they're important in my life. Matthew here in the front row. Another friend of mine, Trey. Tony P. Sponsy brother of mine. I've got more clean time than they do. You understand what I mean? I've got more clean time than they do. And probably it's fair to say that, you know, I've been promoted or have had a job in counseling longer than they have. But the reality of it is them guys have done hula hoops around me when it comes to working on step work. At 2 years in, I made a drastic change in my life, and I changed sponsors. And the sponsor I remember, I never forget it. So unlike most of you that work 12 steps, I had to work 18 of them. So I had to start at 2 years clean all the way back to step one again. And, you know, for me, that was the absolute most horrific meeting that you could ever have. You some bitches do this, I hate y'all. So if y'all ever are chairing a meeting and you get up there and say, all right, what step are you on? And you need to, you know, talk about that. You know what I mean? First couple of years of my recovery, that was rough. You know what I mean? I wanted to hide. And if anybody knows me real well, knows that I like to talk a lot. And if I don't share in a meeting, it's something's fucking wrong. You know? You know, I got through that. And when I remember this, the very first time I had called the sponsor that I have today, which I've known him for 20 years, the very first time I called him and he was my sponsor, he asked me about my day. And I started off by talking about the clients that I have on my caseload. And he said, "Motherfucker, I don't care about your clients." He said, "I don't care about your clients." He said, "How are you doing today?" And I didn't know how to respond to that. You know? And I'm going to be 100% honest with you. The first 6 months of him sponsoring me was basically a series of me calling my sponsor, telling on myself, and then having to explain what I'm afraid of and why. Oh, man. That's one of the reasons why I hate step six so much, because that one, you know what I mean? You know, obviously, I don't think I mentioned this in the beginning. I should have told you this in the beginning. My clean date is 3-3 of 2020. I don't know. That's 5 years, 9 months, 10 months. I don't know. I don't keep up with it. 3-3 of 2020. But I'm going to tell you, since starting to work the steps, I think I started about, it was probably a little over 3 years ago, and starting to go through that and actually surrendering to this program, because that's what fighting the process is all about. Okay. That's what fighting the process is all about. It's a lack of surrender. You understand? And I'm going to be 100% honest with you. It took me a little over two years of coming in here every single day, pretending to be somebody I'm not, getting job titles, getting certificates, giving, you know, all these letters and whatever you want to call it, faking it till you make it, to finally, after 2 years of doing this thing, I finally surrendered and threw my hands up and said, "I give up and I need some help." Man, that's changed my life. It's the most drastic thing that it's helped is something that most of you don't see except for my wife. The way that I'm able to treat my wife every day, the way that I'm able to be a good husband. I can stand here and say, you know, of all the things that I've done in my life, you know, whether staying clean, you know, whether I get jobs at work or whatever the case may be, this is the one thing that is very, very important to me. In 5 years of marriage, because my wife, she's never seen me in active addiction. In 5 years of marriage, this is the most beautiful thing. This is what these steps will do for you. Never once in my marriage have I lied to my wife, to the best of my knowledge. Now, I may have told her misinformation on accident, but I've never lied to my wife. Never once in my marriage have I ever put my hands on my wife. Besides playing around, that's a completely different situation, right? Never once in the history of me being married to my wife have I ever called her a bad name in anger. Bad dream's a little different, but you understand what I'm talking about, right? Yeah.
I did not want that image.
Well, hey. He said, "Get honest." He said, "Get honest." Right. So, in closing, what I would like to say is a message to the newcomer: please keep coming back. Please keep coming back, and please don't be so hard on yourself the way that I was. Please be able to take the message that I shared. Because you don't have to fight this process. It's, you know, when you finally surrender to this program, you can watch your life change. You understand what I'm saying? But there is one positive thing that I will say. You know, despite all the ups and downs, you know, Narcotics Anonymous only grants us one wish: freedom from active addiction. Despite all of my hard-headedness, all of my this and that, from 3-3 till 2020 up until today, I've only picked up one white key tag.
Hell yeah.
So there's that.
Hell yeah.
So I think it's, I guess my time's up, right? Thank y'all for letting me share.
I'm Chris, I'm an addict. I'd like to call up Ashley B. now.
Nope. I don't do no side ass hugs. If we're gonna hug, we're gonna hug. My name's Ashley, I'm an addict. So this woman whom I'm about to introduce is my rock. She entered Narcotics Anonymous on that particular day after treatment at my 10-year celebration and took me outside and asked me to sponsor her. And I told her, I'm not a newcomer sponsor. I'm too deep. You ain't ready for that. She was persistent, and I said, okay, God, let's run it. Proceeded to sponsor her a couple times. Third time's the charm, right? Now, her truth is she'll tell you I fired her. I did not. We can't sponsor, and I can't be sponsored if I don't participate in sponsorship. And so what I have watched in her in fighting the process, i.e. sponsorship, and she will tell you her story. I've watched her dig so deep and grow so much. I have been there in her struggles. I have been there in her successes. And this is the beauty about sponsorship. She's always there to pick me up too. And so I never want to do life without you. And I love you so much. Without further ado, Amber.
Hey family, I'm a grateful recovering addict called Amber.
Amber.
Let me start off with, I am perimenopausal, right? So if you see me doing this or like this, it's not anxiety, it is a hot flash. Okay?
Understood.
Right. Or if I seem like I'm a little lost, it's called brain fog. And it's real bad right now. So this topic, fighting the process, we were at Fun in the Sun last year, and it's me and Matt and Ashley and my mom and a bunch of other people hanging out on the beach, and Matt's like, hey, what are you passionate about? And I'm like, women's issues, mental health and recovery, but you know, I'm real good about fighting the process, right? And he's like, that's it right there. I was like, fuck you, Matt. Let me tell you why I'm a fighter. Because for 30 years, I didn't fight back. Right? For 30 years, I did not fight. For 30 years, I allowed you to do whatever you wanted to me. And I did it quietly because I was told that if I ever told anyone, God wouldn't love me and I was going to hell, right? So I just allowed things to happen. I allowed life to happen. I did not fight anything. I did not fight for me. And so on September 10th of 2015, I come into this process And I knew that it was time to, like, do some work, right? Like, I was not going to just let life happen to me anymore. And I was so full of rage and resentment and anger that, like, I didn't do hugs. I had a knife in my pocket. Don't hug me. Don't touch me. Don't approach me. Nothing. Right? Because hugging was touch, and touch is transactional. So you do not have permission to touch me. And so I fought that part, right? And so Ashley mentioned that I asked her to sponsor me. That was the first day we had actually met, and I was willing to speak to someone, and I was so terrified. And she said, I don't really do newcomers, right? Because, you know, you need, maybe you should find someone closer to your clean time. And I was like, but I really appreciate what you said, and, like, I don't know. And yeah, I spent a lot of years saying she fired me twice, but the truth is that I did not, I was unwilling to do the work, right? I was unwilling to call her. I was unwilling to open up, right? Because if I ever tell, I'm going to hell and God won't love me. So I'm not telling. Plus, like, who is this person with all this clean time that's going to be worried about my shit, right? Like, my shit is not important. And so I stayed quiet, right? And so she let me go for me. Not because she didn't have time for me, but for me. And so I found this other sponsor who is younger and fun and co-signed all my bullshit. And she was a little grabby, right? Like, she would, like, grab my ass and all the things. And it was familiar to me because I was used to that before I got to Narcotics Anonymous. And so I accepted that treatment when I got here. Not from men, right? But I would accept it from women because only two women had ever hurt me in my life. But lots of men had, right? And, like, it was fine. It was fun. It was whatever. And so I did this, you know, I jumped into step work right away and jumped into service work right away. And I've always been a writer, right? And that step work was the best shit ever. It was so beautifully written. It was so detailed. Right? She would look at me occasionally and be like, I don't understand why I'm even sponsoring you. Like, this is so deep. And it was like, it was, but it was flowery deep. It wasn't like real deep, but it was as deep as I could get at the time. Right? And then there would be a question that says, have you ever blah, 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 yes or no, explain, and my answer would be no. No, I'm not going to explain. She's like, this is why we're doing sponsorship. Because I said, no, I'm not going to explain. You have not earned that information from me. And so by 18 months, I was on my ninth step, like flying through. Right? I had 6 sponsees at 18 months. And then my brother died in a car wreck. I lost my fucking mind. I was so sad. And I realized that all of those things that I had done, all of those service committees I was on, all that step work I had done, it was all a bunch of hollow bullshit. I fired my sponsor, I fired my sponsees, and walked 7 miles away from that meeting back to my house. And spent the next several years fighting the process. Right? And it's really funny that I struggle so much with fighting this process because my job, my career, is a process review analyst. Right? It is. I get paid to make sure everybody's following policies and procedures and following their process. Right? So that all holds up legally. But I can't do that shit for myself. Right? And so, like I said, I fired my sponsor, fired my sponsees. That really affected them because a lot of us come in here with abandonment issues, and I just abandoned those women. but I had abandoned myself too. And so I go and I find me another sponsor, and we do 1, 2, and 3, because they said since I got stuck and fired everybody, I must need to start over, right? We go one, do 1, 2, 3. And then I don't like how deep they're trying to get, so I find someone else and I go do 1, 2, 3. Right? And this second one helps me out a little bit more, right? I have to go through the entire basic text and write down every single sentence that has the word we in it. I don't know if you've ever had that assignment. It's big. Right? And then, like, one of the biggest things that I used to say in my earlier recovery, let me say, I've got 10 years clean. I'm still in early recovery. Okay? I don't care how long I have. I'm still in early recovery. But when I was in earlier recovery, my favorite thing to say was, I know. I know. I know. I know. So that same sponsor that had me write out the wheeze had me write down, what do I know? What do you really know? Because, like, I'd read all the literature, and I'm really intelligent, like most of us are, because we have to be to do the shit that we did when we were out in the streets. And so she's like, I want 3 pages on what you know. And so I did. I was like, okay. And I'm, like, writing, and I got my little curly, you know, colored pens, and each section about what I know is in a different color. And I'm writing, and the more I'm writing, the more I'm realizing that, like, it doesn't matter what I know. Because for me, I will never get to wisdom if I cannot apply knowledge. Ever. Right? And so I had all of this information in my head and no ability to apply it. So, you know, I don't know shit. I know nothing. Because awareness without action is just knowledge that sits there and rots in my fucking head. Right? And then she wanted to get a little too, let me get to know you, and so I fired her. Right? I needed to move on in a different direction. And then I found this other one who was great, you know. My favorite thing about her was... Oh, between that, this one and the one before, I went back to Ashley, right? And then she, we were kind of talking some, and I was going through this other thing that she was helping me deal with, and then she saw on Facebook that I got engaged. And so, again, I'm still not communicating, right? Because she found out on Facebook, and she wasn't in, like, and so then she had to go in a different direction again. She's like, you're still not ready. And, like, my thought was, I mean, don't be mad just because my husband, who doesn't like you, didn't invite you to the, yeah. Right? My fiance could not stand her. Yeah. And so then I go to this other lady, and we're going over some step work, and I'm like, I have this issue, and I'm telling her about my issue, and she looks at me, and she says, yeah, issue, and I'm like, yeah, this issue, and she's like, it's you. Okay. I mean, I understand that. And so, like, I'm still fighting this process because I keep sponsor hopping whenever they decide to get a little bit deeper. And, you know, I stopped talking to anyone for a while. I'd go to some meetings, and I'd share where I'm at. But then, like, I'm not talking, you know, like Mike was talking about earlier, I'm not talking about my pain. I'm not talking about, like, what's really going on with me. And we were out to dinner after a celebration one night, and I am literally in the bathroom, curled up in the fetal position, crying because everything hurts so bad. And she comes storming in the bathroom, and she's like, bitch, you're ready now. And that's exactly what she said. And I said, no. I said, we've tried this twice, and it didn't work. Like, I'm not going to do that to you again. And she said, that's not your call. It's time. I said, okay. Now, does that mean I jumped right back into all this stuff? Absolutely not. Did she make me start at one? No. Because, see, where I got stuck on nine was having to make an amends to myself, and I didn't know how to do it, nor did I think I deserved it. And she said, what you've been doing these last several years is making that amends to yourself by not acting out on those same behaviors. So it was time to move the fuck on. Right? And so, you know, I didn't complete step work really quickly after that. I still had, you know, 10, 11, and 12 to go. 10 wasn't so bad, right? It was pretty easy once I got the motivation to start it. 11 I really struggled with because, remember, the whole God won't love me and I'm going to hell piece. I really struggled with a higher power in this process. And so trying to figure out what that looks like for me, what prayer and meditation looks like for me, continuing for a year and a half not writing on step 11 because I kept trying to fit myself in this box I was never created for. You know, fit myself in the box of my upbringing, and that doesn't fit me. I am too big for that box. And so I finally got through that step, right? And then it took a little while, and I got through 12. Look, y'all, it took me 8 years to work 12 steps. Because it took what it took for me. And I got so much relief on the other side of it. But let me tell you about what happened in my first four steps. So I'm a human trafficking survivor. One of the people on that four step is my ex-husband. His name is Charlie. I can say his name now. He was my trafficker. When it was time to write about him in my four step, I said, no, fuck you, I'm not ready. And so then we come to this place where it's time for me to do some work around him because he keeps popping back up in my life with regard to other things that I need to work on. And so Ashley and I take the time to sit down and write, like, figure out which questions we're going to answer, because I'm just doing step work on this person and on this situation. And like, I was so excited because I knew that it was time, and I'm still not doing it. So let me tell you what fighting the process looks like today. Today, fighting the process looks like I know the relief that's on the other side of it. I'm still not doing it because I know I can no longer use it as an excuse to not move forward. I can't use it as an excuse to say I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy enough to go back to school or to clean my fucking house, right? Or brush my goddamn teeth or whatever. You know what I'm saying? All of those things that I know will bring me to the person that I am supposed to be, that I know I can be, but because I spent all of those years not knowing who the hell I am, I'm not working on that step work. Because I know that there's freedom on the other side. And so I get to sit back and I get to be lazy and I get to be adequate. But like, I didn't come to Narcotics Anonymous to be adequate. I didn't come here to stay stuck. Like, I am happy, joyous, and free, don't get me wrong, but I can be happier, full of more joy, and free from that bullshit that I keep holding on to because I'm afraid to grow. Right? Like Mike was talking about holding on to pain like a teddy bear. Right? And as soon as he said that, if you were in this last meeting, I was crying so hard, like trying not to show anybody the pain that I was in. Because as long as I can hold on to that, I don't have to do anything different. It is an excuse I get to use. And I'm tired. Right? Like, I do talk about my pain today. I have a son who can't walk right now because on December the 19th, he was a passenger in a car wreck, and the driver of the car is doing fucking whippets driving down the road. And his legs get smashed. 4 days after that, 2 days before Christmas, my children's father dies from this disease. Right? And I am holding on and I am holding it together, and I'm the best chaos coordinator you will fucking find. And I'm sharing about it in meetings and I'm crying and I'm talking to my sponsor all the time and my sponsees are calling me. And for the first time ever, like, this is how I know that things are changing. For the first time ever in the last month and a half, I have allowed people to show up for me. I've talked about my pain and my struggle in a way that lets people know that I'm not just okay by myself. Right? Because I either don't accept help because I feel unworthy, right? Which is ego. Or I don't allow people to show up for me because I'm a badass bitch and I don't need your fucking help, which is pride and ego. And so now I'm letting people in. And that burden is getting lifted. And I still hadn't started on that step work. Right? I would love to be able to tell you that when I leave here, I'm going to go home and I'm going to do this step work. Right? But that's not the truth. The truth is that I'm gonna stay for a few more meetings. I do have to go back this evening. I may or may not be here tomorrow. Like, I have to drive back to Nashville because I have that's bullshit. I have things that I can do that are not required of me tonight, but I am running away. That's the truth. I'm running away.
Good to know.
I'm up. Yeah, I'm running away. Right, because I know that with the meetings that they have lined up here, I'm going to get fed, and it's going to make me do some work, and I don't want to feel those fucking feelings because I'm tired of feeling right now.
That's real.
And so I'm going to go home. I may or may not go to my usual Friday night meeting. Right, tomorrow I'll probably sit on my couch listening to a book because I still escape into fantasy, which I've been doing since I was 4 years old. You know, listen to a book, color on my phone, probably spend a couple hours on the phone with a sponsee who's in mental health crisis right now, and it's easier to help her deal with her stuff than it is to deal with mine. Sunday's the Super Bowl. I got to be home for that. Right? These are plausible but untrue reasons for my behavior. They are. They're plausible but untrue reasons for my behavior. It's because I'm afraid. I am afraid to heal. And so I continue to fight this process with 10 years fucking clean. And so when I'm on the beach with Matt, and we're talking about like topics for this year's convention, my hope is that he's not going to pick fighting the process, because then I have to tell the truth. Right? My hope is that he's going to pick mental health and recovery. My hope is that he's going to pick, you know, a women's rap, because then I can talk about a woman being in a woman's body and the struggles that come along with that when you have sexual trauma and mental health disorders and all that shit. But he's like, oh, there's your topic.
I get it.
Because then I have to tell the truth. Right? The current truth, not experience truths. Anyway, I know this thing is about to be over. I know we got to wrap it up. Like, we don't have to make it that hard. Making it hard is a choice. And at some point, I'm going to stop choosing to make it harder on myself. I can't tell you that's going to be today. Just like I can't tell you I'm not going to be high tomorrow. Anyway, that's all I got.
Y'all always bring it.
I'm Chris, I'm an addict. Thank you, everybody. About to close the meeting with I'll circle up. I'm sorry.
Good job. Let me get this stuff down here.
One down.
Good job. Good job.
Thank you.